talk to a spirit. She comes in my dreams.
What is the path to awakening supposed to look like, to feel like? How do you know if you are on it? We ask these very sacred and sometimes vulnerable questions to many different women from all walks of life. A conversation that needs to be shared and heard. I'm Jo Hendy.
I'm Amanda Parker.
And welcome to the Girl Awakening Podcast.
And the really fast forward version of it is there's a queen and a king, actually, but they are the good queen and the good king. They do everything right. Everything is, you know, nicey-nicey. But they can't get pregnant.
Happy, happy.
Yeah, happy-happy. But they can't get pregnant, no matter what they can do. No, they can't get pregnant. And so there's an old woman that is like the old medicine woman instructs the queen to speak her longing like unfiltered and put that into a cup and turn it onto the earth. And in the morning, two flowers will be revealed under the cup and to only eat the white flower, the pure. And what she does is when the flowers are revealed, there's a white flower and a red flower.
Oh, no.
And she's overcome with desire and she gobbles up the red flower. And then in a panic, then she eats the white flower.
Sounds like something I would do.
But this is the thing that happens, right? It's this moment of rupture. It's the moment of our lives are perfect. Everything's going well.
Just have it all.
Oh, my God. I feel the heat of attraction to someone. Yeah. I feel that, like, and it's the desire to have an affair or to do something that ruptures the perfect narrative.
Mm.
And we can either have a perspective of that as that's wrong, that's bad, or we can say it's an invitation into a mythic process. Because what happens to the queen is she gets pregnant, she gives birth, and what comes out first is this little slimy snake, and it gets tossed out the window, and then she gives birth to a boy. And we never hear of the snake again until 18 years later, the young prince decides that he wants to marry, goes off into the woods, comes across this gigantic serpent, which is like all evil looking. And in Martin Shaw's version of this, he calls it like the exiled part of us, the wild twin, the wild twin.
Yeah.
And it's this beast that's like, I want to marry, and it's hungry. It's like, I've been watching you from your perfect little castle and you haven't given me any love or attention, and now I've transformed into this distorted beast. And thankfully, the prince shows compassion and welcomes this lindworm back to the castle.
It sounds like a fairy tale.
It's amazing.
Disney
and
story.
And the lindworm is set up to marry a few people that offer to marry so the other prince can marry, but this prince gobbles up, like it eats because it's been so starved its whole life, until there's one shepherd's daughter far off in the village and she agrees to marry, and she actually goes to the woods, sees the old woman from the beginning. The old woman advises her, wait a year and a day until you go and marry the lindworm, which is the worm is the name for a snake in that part of the world. It's an old Norwegian myth. And sew 12 nightshirts, like nightdresses, with embroidery around the heart. And you'll know why that's the case in the time. And so the day comes, a year and a day later, she goes and marries the lindworm. They go down to the dungeon. Same process happens where the lindworm's probably going to eat her. And he's like, take off your dress, I'm like hungry for that connection. He said, I will take off my dress if you take off a layer of your scales. And so screaming in pain and in discomfort, he takes off a layer of the scales and again leans in, take off your dress. And so she says, okay, I will take off a layer of my dress if you take off another layer of your skin. And so the scales. And so this process goes on, as you can imagine, 12 times until there's this slimy, scaleless serpent in front of her. And as instructed by the old woman, she has a bucket of milk and a bucket of lye or ash and that she took into the room. And so she grabs the scrubbing brush and begins to scrub the skin. And this snake wails in pain and discomfort. And after the scrubbing's done, she gathers this precious snake that's so vulnerable and weak now, and places it in the now bath. She drew a bath and put the milk in there, and the snake transforms into a prince.
Oh.
And at the end, it says, you know, this young man has the face of somebody that was exiled 18 years earlier. And the idea is that that beast that he became, we want to see that it's evil. You know, it was eating up all of these things. And in truth, it had just become so starved and so distorted because it had been exiled. It hadn't been welcome. It hadn't been integrated. And when that part of, like, I want to make sure that as listeners, don't listen to it from like a gendered perspective. Oh, it was a woman that rescued a man, or vice versa. It could be any version of that. But just because every character in a myth represents part of our own psyche, right? So a part was willing to offer love and compassion and understanding to give that part, give the serpent what it required, which was like steadfast love and compassion. And support it in its process of healing. And then what happened is at the end is they got married. And that's not like, oh, yay, a man marries a woman or vice versa. It's the sign of union, which is required to reach God.
Integration, you know, to the whole thing.
Yeah. And so this is like, it's old tales of that, of like that story. The dragon is another archetype. So the serpent, in my perspective, is the feminine in this. From a cultural lens, you know, I often call this part of women the dragon, or that serpent energy as well, because in a lot of myths the dragon's seen as like the symbol of chaos and evil, and in truth there's actually a backstory to that, and it's just the exiled character, the exiled part, and what's required is exactly what the shepherd's daughter did for the lindworm to come back into wholeness and, you know, apply that to culture at the moment.
I think about Avatar too when you say that, when he's finding his dragon or his and he says, how will I know which one is mine? And he said, the one that'll try and kill you first. And it's like, it's same thing, isn't it? It's like, wow, it's so interesting. And while you were just saying that too, I had another thought, and it goes back to even before we were on recording, when we were talking about, you know, how you are, and I hope you don't mind me saying this, you know, you are on your path. We know that. We watch you and we love what you do and how raw it is and how authentic it is and how you really are just living a very authentic life. And it's really beautiful to see. And I'm grateful that, you know, you are in our lives just to watch and inspire. But you talked about before that the path, you know, the purpose, the path to purpose, or however you want to see or look at it, can be challenging. But there are gifts, like in the, you know, finding the water and then the frog and so forth. And that same story you just told reminded me of you on your journey and you know, how you have to face all of the ugly parts as well to be able to get to the good parts. Can you just before, we've been going for a while, we might even have to split this one.
That's because,
but it's just so good. It's too good not to. can you talk to us about your journey and where it's at now and how you see it? And God, I feel even emotional even asking that question.
No, but it's okay.
To be honest, I don't think I've actually sat with somebody that's so
beautiful reflection of us.
Yeah, that's it. It's like, I've just manifested to reflect the part of you that is in there, you know.
Yeah.
It happens at programs, actually, when there's and it's so beautiful to receive that appreciation from women. But the truth is, it's like, I'm just reflecting the part of you which you really were ready to see, you know.
And it just must be so beautiful and raw and vulnerable and open and
Yeah.
like a birth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wish it was like there's a part of me that's like, oh, it's really nice to be like Britney's the one that they like, you know, Brit the person. But the truth is it's like that's not actually what they're relating to. It's relating to this current of energy that is exact same energy that you have in you, that you can feel in me, and you're like, you know, that's the truth. And it's not Brit the person.
No.
But I appreciate it.
Yeah.
But thank you for asking the question.
I appreciate it.
You're asking the question. There was part of that that I wanted to respond to, but I can't remember. But
before we move away from the worm, while you're remembering that, I was watching a program around compost just recently, and the person it was creating all this compost and trying to do it on a community scale and things like that, and then wanting to give birth to this better way of doing it, and he named it Bertha, as a B, Earth, R, and the journey around all of that. And there's one point in it where he just sat there with his cup of tea under the stars, and he was like, why does doing something good for everyone have to be so hard? And I was like, oh my God, I can feel you so much. It's like what we're talking around here with this anima, and
Jesus.
That's the first thing that came to my head too.
Why does it have to be so hard? You know, and I think that goes very deep. Why?
Well, this is what I'm learning, and it acts like it sounds like an abstract story, but it actually relates to the very thing that we're talking about at the beginnings around our relationship to death and fear and things like that. Because love and ease and beauty is present in death, and everything else as it is. So like how I'm realizing, it's like, yeah, you know, why is this journey so hard? Oh, it's only hard because that's my interpretation. It's like that's only my perspective. And so I can, for example, the more initiations I've gone through where there's had to be like this big surrender moment, and there's been plenty, is it actually gets easier, because when stuff falls away, or when there's, oh, okay, I have to let go, what the suffering, the part that's hard is the gripping.
Yeah.
That's what's hard. It's the, I don't want to. And it's like,
you don't realize until afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. Attachment. It's the gripping that's hard. It's like, oh, I really want everyone to like me. I really want to maintain this image of myself. I really want to maintain this relationship. And if I'm able to just let it go and not make it a big deal, it's actually really easeful. Yeah. Like I had an experience like that just recently, and somebody asked me, they're like, how are you going? And I'm like, I'm actually at peace about it. I'm actually totally fine because I trust in life. And it sounded like, you know, that story, that myth of the lindworm might have been a bit abstract, but it's exactly being in the position of the shepherd's daughter and seeing this crazy beast in front of you being like, take off your shirt. You know, what have you got to let, like, let go of something that is on you that you're attached to? And she just says, okay, I'll let go of this if you reveal part of your soul to me too. And it's, you know, that's the representation of the myth in our lives. And so to answer your question of like, where am I at with it, I've come to a really interesting place where there's a quote, I think it's Joseph Campbell, so I'll have to excuse if it's not, but he talks about wanting to know our purpose is a phase. Wanting to know our purpose is a phase. What we actually don't long for is to know the exact meaning in our life, but the feeling of being alive. And so we can focus. I see this a lot when we attach, if I know my purpose and if I'm living my path, then I'll be okay. Then it'll actually rescue me. Then I'll have a reason for all of this madness. Like, it'll save me. At least I have this as a kind of little golden, like, here's your...
Like, it's going to be at one moment.
Here's your trophy. Yes. Good job.
Yes.
Like a type of thing. And it's the, you know, being on your path and being, or having knowledge or clarity of your purpose is kind of considered like that. And what I've learned is when I've been in a position where I'm like, oh, yeah, I feel really clear on my path. I feel really clear on my purpose. It's almost like the next phase.
Yeah.
The next phase is actually, in a way, letting that go. And what is the actual invitation here? It's the experience of being alive. So what does that mean? It means that at any point, you are in service to the truth of the energy right now. And so how that looks for me is that I felt really clear on what my path was in terms of like all the work that I'm offering and the particular way that it looks. And I was really clear. Oh, yeah, good. Got that box ticked.
Yeah. <You know? Uh-oh.
laughs> exactly. And then of course when I was in South Africa on this Naked and Afraid experience, I went in there treating it very much like an initiatory experience, like a vision quest, if you will.
Mm.
And it kind of suiting because we didn't eat very much.
and you were going to come out with all these tools.
Buffalo thorn is full of minerals. I've learned that
exactly,
from you.
Exactly. And
they will comfort our tummy before yes. we go to sleep at night.
Yes.
And so day 17, I'll never forget it. Thankfully, the producer was actually really generous, and because I said, I need a moment to completely be by myself. And he was like, okay, because every moment you filmed in case something interesting happens.
Oh, right.
Single moment.
You are, right. So you asked for that just because
just
they
said,
were in your face. The
exactly.
Whole time.
Yep. I was like, yep. I actually not need this. This is something yep. powerful that's happening for me. And he was like, okay.
Yeah.
And so I took myself away and I leaned on a tree and I was there for like hours. And I got a really strong message mm-hmm. and an image of where I'm being asked to go next, and the whole part of me is like, what? I thought I figured this out.
Yes.
I thought I'd got my task, like this isn't. And I realized, oh, it's because I got attached to that yeah. as being the answer. And so that's why knowing your purpose is a phase, because the true experience is that God, universe, the animate consciousness of, you know, the great whatever might change the script,
yeah.
might actually need you to fulfill a particular role.
Yeah.
Life, something happened in the cosmos that we can't see. And so actually now we need to mobilize you for this.
Yes.
Now we need you to be flexible, to be dynamic. And instead of your purpose being fixed, it is we need you to have acute awareness of the energy. Which is like, how do I describe this? Is that we need your body to be so attuned and sensitive and aware to when we say, hey, this direction yes. now, then I'm like, okay. And it's dynamic. And it means that I have to let go of more. It's like, yay. But this is the thing.
Yes.
Is coming back to what we yeah, exactly yay. But this is the thing, what I said is like the ultimately we don't actually want to be in control is what we want. What do we want then? If we don't want to be in control, even though we think we don't want to be in control, what do we want? We want to feel alive.
Yeah.
And what is being alive is being with totality, with the good, the bad, the joy, the grief, that is the duality.
Mm.
So what we always seek is duality, which is the ultimate expression, like how that's expressed in our lives is through aliveness.
Mm.
We feel the highs and the lows and everything like that. Like the more we expand our range to feel grief, the more range that we have to feel joy.
Mm.
And so this invitation, the next chapter of my life, it's like, well, actually – Now it's dynamic. Mm. Now there's no goal.
Yeah, no.
It's
love
like
it.
I've had the goal taken away.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is like so often purpose becomes this goal. Once I know my soul path, then I'm succeeding, I'm winning at life, I've got the trophy, I've hit the goal. And then then ironically it's like the
moving
great cosmic joke. The great cosmic joke is like actually there's no goal.
Yeah.
And actually now we need you to be flexible and dynamic, and this is the embodiment of the feminine.
Oh.
this is exactly her. It's like, oh, okay, you want to have the responsibility of bringing this energy back into planet Earth. She's not fixed.
Yes.
Then she's dynamic. She's the epitome of aliveness. She moves and evolves and changes based on what is required in service to love. That is the feminine.
Mm.
And so that's where I'm at currently.
Wow.
And a big part of that, to make it more specific,
gorgeous.
And it's so raw and vulnerable and so like that it's not fully formed by any means, but I've had a little glimpse of it over the last couple months. And
you
it's
think?
Got, yeah, I think, I think. But it's got revealed to me. It's often it can't, like, often it shows us, it comes in the form of like really, really triggering, revealing situations, which are hard to be with because yeah. it's like, oh, okay, I'm being invited to look at this and transform it in myself. And it's old. Yeah. It was really, really old. And it's to do with, I call it the dragon. And
effect.
So particularly yeah. And in a lot of mythology, the dragon is a representative of women's sensuality and sexuality.
Wow.
And interestingly, I've had that. Every woman has, and every human being has, an expression of sexuality in them. But I had experiences when I was younger, and this may not, like, there's some listeners that may not be prepared to hear this particular, like, I've walked a big journey with this work, and so it's not where everyone's going to come to. And so if this doesn't resonate, that's totally fine. But I had multiple experiences when I was younger of sexual abuse. And what I came to realize is that I've had this really like big mm-hmm. Feminine energy mm-hmm. in my body since mm-hmm. I was almost too small to hold it. Mm. And people could see that. And mm-hmm. the feminine is a nourisher. And so people see that mm. because we have a distorted perception, I had experiences where they fed on mm. because like everyone actually wants to be nourished by mm. the feminine,
yeah.
mm. you know, and but in a weird constellation of culture that we're in, the way that we often, that's the way that's often happens is there's a feeding and mm. a yeah. non-consensual feeding on that. This is that same take energy in so the survival wild. Context. There's mm. like, I'm just taking, yeah. I'm feeding, I'm getting my thing to survive. And in that circumstance, like those people, I and see that they were trying to get mm. something from me to heal something in themselves.
I was going to say the unmet mm. parts of
exactly.
themselves. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm. And so I've had this big recent invitation to look at that because I've known for a long time and I felt it for a long time. Mm. That's been a huge area both of massive shame mm. for me but also enormous power, and I've had it reflected into me many, many times, and it's also been like the points of shame that have occurred in my life, it's all been around sexuality or like too much or mm. too little or whatever, and it's there's a very big theme. And so what's being revealed to me is like there's a very big path for you here, Britt. Mm. But you know, and that's an area of attention of culture that is needed.
So much. It's like,
you know,
that
not
is
not feeding from the feminine.
It's a very unhealthy area in society mm. and in our belief systems and in programs mm. that are running. Mm. And it's a very courageous space mm. to step into because it's a big energy to hold, mm. as you've just shared, from a very young age. But to offer that to the world in a mm. conscious way.
In a very mm. responsible way.
Yeah. Very responsible way. And I realized, like, this is the thing that I don't think a lot of people understand. It's like the more work that you do and the more capacity you build in your body and your nervous system,
mm.
life doesn't – it's not like you're given less. You're given more. You're given more responsibility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's not that my work that I was doing before was like, oh, that didn't serve a purpose or anything like that.
No.
Like I had to develop the skills, the capacity, the nervous system that could hold this level of responsibility and to do it mm. and to do it with consciousness and grace and to do it from the right place.
Yeah.
Because I think this is a very, very big, gnarly mm. wound and distortion mm. that we have globally.
Yeah.
And so it requires people coming into it with the highest frequency.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, there's no, what I describe as like the pattern that I often see, and I've seen this in myself, this is why the invitation to transform it is still very present, is feeding mm. or starvation.
Mm.
You know, what's the path of nourishment?
Mm.
And that is represented in that myth when she bathes the prince
yeah.
in the milk.
Yeah.
And the milk is a sign of the mother's nourishment.
Yeah.
You know, what's the path in the middle? It's not the snake gobbling the princess up, and it's not starving and exiling the snake.
Yeah.
It's offering it the nourishment.
Yeah.
And you know, that's something that's been at the fore recently for me. That's an interesting invitation that I'm dancing with at the moment, but it's very fresh.
Yeah.
But still, it's kind of, it's not like I'm stepping away at all from my current work, because it's more like the continuation. Like, my work's in ecosomatics.
I was going to say, I've been thinking all the way through of your work in somatics, ecosynamics, and it's somatics, and it just feels like a very big realization, an expansion of that into an area that's kind of been in the shadows or exiled.
That's it.
And therefore distortion has occurred.
That's it.
Yeah.
And so it's, in a way, it like adds another layer to the earth framework and to the work I do in ecosomatics, because instead of being like, okay, here's the framework and we run people through it, it's like, all right, what's the points on this mythic journey in this process that are the biggest blocks? Where do people get stuck? Where do people get held up? And I was actually having a conversation the other day with a woman who's doing some like bodywork training stuff, and we were talking about this in ecosomatics, and she said something to me that's so true, is that in both in the practice space and the academic space, the conversations around ecosomatics are beautiful, connecting to the land through our bodies, this merging of deep ecology and somatics. But left out of that entire conversation is our eco-sexuality, or just sexuality, and its role in that. That's a big part of, you know, being in a body, being human. Yeah. That's a big aspect of our lives. And so left out of the conversation of how do we connect to the earth through our bodies, or how do we fully incarnate so we can live out our purpose on earth and vice versa, and live in full relationship and reciprocity. Well, that's a, that's a pretty big chunk.
That's so interesting. Like, I can it's feel absolutely parts incredible. Of me that are like, want to separate the two out. You know, body, growth, spiritual, all of that, and then sexuality.
Yeah.
Over here.
Yeah.
It's so interesting.
Yeah. Because it's so tricky. It's like there's, you know, no how doubt there's some amazing.
The two together. Like, yeah. How does it, yeah.
Yeah.
with where you're speaking into, though, like, you know, I think the sensory journey is a very big part of, because I was going to ask you before, like, you know, how do we make the changes around what you were talking about earlier with the anima, animus, and the, you know, the healthy relationship aspects of life. But this is, you know, going that layer, we've shed several layers of scales here. And this is where, like, you know, like that integration is of our healthy sexuality in each of us, healthy relationship with our own sex is so big. And I think, again, maybe this might be controversial too, where a lot of this, the fluidity in society is a part of that journey that we're all on as well, and exploring what that's all about. But you're talking on a whole different threshold with what you're talking around with the ecosynamics, somatics, and the eco-sexuality. Because I think, you know, when you have a relationship with nature, you feel alive, and you can't deny your sexual feeling in nature either. I feel that comes alive as well, you know, the feeling of there's a wholeness in how you feel when you're connected to in nature. Well, it's quite amazing.
Yeah. It's funny that, like, now even I'm thinking about it deeper as we're talking, like, the whole field of research of ecosomatics, connecting with the body, learning from nature, learning from the bodies of nature, like, to leave ecosexuality or sexuality in general, like our relationship to creation, outside of that conversation seems like a huge disservice, because you look to the natural world and the entire pulse that runs beneath it, that drives often the behavior of everything in the natural world, that drives the cycles is creation. Everything is doing, everything is driven by creation. And it can either do that. I'm a really big fan of the Gene Keys, and Richard Rudd, who created the Gene Keys, talks about this
started
too.
To read it's like book.
We can either pursue that pulse of creation through the lens of getting what I need. So as in evolving the matter, like, I'm getting this to evolve myself, or to evolve my family, or we can use it to evolve consciousness. There was something else that I wanted to say. Also, just to kind of ground it down, because this is still a curiosity and a questioning that I'm having too. But the practice, how I've brought it down into practice in my life, and it could be a useful tool for anybody listening, is like I've recognized that this feminine part of my feminine nature, part of my earthly nature, is trying to be expressed here, which has been exiled through experiences that caused pain or shame or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
What's the path of exile, which is pushing it aside? So I'll use a really basic example. When I split from my partner at the end of last year, I recognized this then. I was like, I really want to like this is a part that's has been a challenging part of the dynamic in my relationship. And so at that point, I was like, I'm going to go celibate for a year.
Yeah.
And that's, and there's nothing neither wrong or bad about that at all. But over the months, I started to realize there was a layer of punishment to it. There was a layer of exile. Mm. I'm going to starve this part.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the opposite side, there's the part that likes the chaos, likes the drama, and just wants to feed and essentially use others to fill a void, or use others to feel sensation, or use others to get a particular high or whatever it is. And so that's not it either.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like sexual bulimia. I actually, interesting that's when you look back at your, when you look back at your life, these patterns show up. When I was a teenager and I was struggling as a result of a lot of that sexual trauma, I developed bulimia, this binge and purge pattern. So look back on your life and see the patterns that show up, because often it relates to many different aspects. But so my question is now, it's like, what is the path of nourishment?
Mm.
Not starvation, not binging, which are neither the two opposite big end swings, and they're ultimately both about self-avoidance.
Mm.
What's the path in the middle, which is nourishment, which is how do I feed the feminine in me in a healthy way?
Yeah.
And in that process, I also nourish others. So it's not just nourishment for me, it's nourishment for other people. And I think that's ultimately how I'd love to see sexuality done in the world. It's like, is this a nourishing experience for both parties?
Yes.
And actually supports the evolution and our wholeness, as opposed to what we see a lot of the time now, not all the time, but
so I think time. I don't think there'd be anybody that could honestly say that they haven't felt shame about some sexual, whether it's a kiss or whatever, all the way encounter. Kind of thing encounter, that there's not some level of shame at one point in any interaction along their history of sexuality. And so we all carry it in some way, shape or form, and how we handle it within ourselves or project it out or it's all been expressed. But I wanted to comment around what you said about the starvation or the because from my own experience after being in, you know, married for many years and then having celibacy, like because I've been learning around myself and who I want to be with next, and whether it's, you know, whatever that looks like, or, you know, as far as a long-term partner or whatever. I went through those phases of thinking I was missing out, you know, panicking, all those kind of things around. And it's a journey in itself from my experience, where you come around to where there is a self-nourishment. And that means lots of different things, but the self, developing a relationship with the self-nourishment has been pivotal to then getting to a point where, okay, I want to be in a mutually nourishing, you know, in exchange dynamic, with someone, dynamic. Kind of have to go through that.
I know, it is like these parts, and it's all perfect. Like there's nothing like... where you are now or like the phase that people are going through or whatever is all perfect. Like I had to go through that process too. But where I found interesting, like there was a very different energy where I was like, I'm celibate and there's nobody coming to touch, like, but actually celibacy can be done in a really, like it can be done in a very different way. But for me, I noticed that, oh, there's a little hint of the Punisher in here. There's a little bit of hint of starvation in order to hope this will go away. Like,
It's like swinging from one end.
Yeah.
That you have been and bad in some way, so you don't deserve it as well. Yeah.
But now it's like, oh, I don't have a partnership. But I'm not going out seeking one either.
Mm.
But should anything arise in my life, my questions will, instead of being like, absolutely no, walls up type of thing, this is what I'm doing at the moment. I have really clear boundaries about what kind of energetic dynamic that I'm going to be in. Is this intention of nourishing, or am I just like, if I'm going to be completely real, it's like, am I just bored or lonely, or am I needing to feel something because I'm, you know, wanting to have a spiritual experience, or I'm feeling emotional or whatever. And if it's ever coming from that energy, or coming from the other person as well, not interested.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, okay, this is amazing. my practice. This is my yoga at the moment. Yeah. Like, this is my pose.
It's very, it's so cool. Well, like, amazing.
No, this is the life practice, the life dojo.
Yeah, oh my goodness.
And I think it cleans up that space so much, doesn't it? Because it's like, takes so much out of the equation. It takes so much out of the space.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wild.
It's a clean slate.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
I have another question before we close things off.
I love how we've travelled, by the way.
It's like, I know. So yeah, it's and so amazing.
I freaking love that it's Naked and Afraid that's brought you like fully being vulnerable. You know, no scales. It's sitting under the tree in that space. It's brought you to where you're looking to journey next.
Oh, it was amazing. Like the metaphor of it.
Oh, it's
was amazing.
Beautiful. It's the universe has a sense of humour.
I know. Isn't it
funny? Absolutely.
Sorry, Jay.
How does a day look for you now?
On a practical level, a day looks for me at the moment, I'm actually just launched an online program, and I'm feeling to take more of my work online, and I've been building that, and I'm feeling all of the other content coming through that wants to be birthed, like this work in Animus. I've got another thing online in the pipeline called Dragon, which is all about this energy. Epic. Too often spend time working on my PhD, so I've got as part of the recent big surrender and letting go, I thought that my PhD was likely going to be over, but thankfully it stayed. This is the thing too, sometimes when you blow your life up, or when it gets blown up, the tendency is to just kind of like burn it all down, or I move overseas or whatever. The mature thing now, once I've gone through that a few times, like, oh, can I sift through and actually figure out, you know, not throw the baby out with the bathwater, actually sift through and see what's actually still true for me here. And one of those, thankfully, was the PhD. It's getting just a changed focus, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been working on that.
Just 50,000 words and just a little tweaking here.
which is
does
actually
that matter? I'm being honest, does that really matter?
I was actually going to give it up, like the PhD.
Yeah.
I was very close to just giving it all up because I really didn't care about the title.
Yes.
I didn't, particularly I had my own little beef, and it was probably, it was a good thing for me to look at to see where the academic system triggered me.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I, after this recent experience where I had something quite, a big event in my life which caused a lot of things to fall away, I thought the PhD was going, and the fact that it stayed.
What does that mean? I'm sorry to be naive.
No, that's okay. So
does it last for a few years or something?
Yeah. So it's 3 or 4 years long.
Right.
And I took a year off and I came back to it, but I had a case study basically, and I'm in the final year. I'm heading into the final year, which is like the full writing phase. Yeah. I've already done the case study, and basically my case study fell through and said, we don't want to be involved anymore.
Okay.
Which is like, oh my God,
yeah.
I think that means it's over. And so I came to my supervisor and shared that, and they were like, actually, we can make this work. Like, it requires
work. It must happen, though. Really? What happens if the case study dies
or
something? Yeah.
It happens. She was sharing many stories of this happening in the past to other people. Mm. And so we kind of brainstormed of how that would look. And ironically, it's like it's come more to this work that we're talking about now.
Hello.
And I know. Yeah. And it was kind of this meant to be moment. And I was on the, because I have to go up to Brisbane for that. And I was on the train home and I thought, maybe if this has actually stayed and now it's been adapted to like be all this more, like it was always in ecosomatics, but more now my own framework as opposed to another culture's or looking at another case study, like it's actually on my work.
Wow. Because this is one of the difficulties, isn't it, in science, if you want to put it that way. You're building on what has been before and you're not actually creating new paradigms. It's more adding another interpretation, or it's kind of a framework that you're restricted by in a way, isn't it, which I imagine for many people would become, you know, 3 years in, either you've got your blinkers on and you're locked in it, or you're kind of going, you know, I don't know if this is really worth it, because I can see so much more out there that needs to be shared or part of this. But so the fact that you've had a natural tweak to your PhD kind of allows that expansion to come through.
Yeah. And of what you're sharing. The funny thing is that what changed my relationship to it is that for the first couple of years, I went into it with like, oh, I'm going to get the PhD. I'm going to get the PhD. I'm going to have a doctor that's going to be supportive to my work. It's going to help me enter circles and conversations that never wouldn't be able to access. I'm going to have that, you know, to bolster the work that I do in the world. And I haven't shared much, but when I first entered the PhD, I didn't enter into it. It's like when you go into a relationship, I didn't do it from a very empowering place. Yeah. I was actually at one of these down moments in my life. And it was a gasping for air. I was like, oh, I'll just do my PhD.
Yes, yeah.
And it was kind of like a life buoy. And I recognize that's no wonder why I've had such a turbulent cup. The first little while was a bit like,
filling of the cup.
Yes. and now what's actually changed my relationship to it is because the fact that it has stayed, despite all of these chaotic events in my life over the last 3 years, is at, like, I want to say chaotic events, like there's been amazing things happen, but in terms of change, like how much change has happened in my life over the last couple of years,
flexibility,
yes, even just the doing the Naked and Afraid, for example,
with 10 days notice, just,
exactly, stuff like that, you know, and relationships ending and all that kind of stuff, is the fact that it's stayed, it's made me go, maybe this isn't about me, maybe this actually work is in service to something that I can't see yet. And that's actually what's motivating me to finish it now. Yeah. It's like, oh, this is actually beyond me. And it's not that I'm self-sacrificing, like, oh, it's I'm needed to do this. It's a different quality to it. I can't really describe it. But so my days are full of working on my business, balancing that with PhD, which is a dance. But they're both really interlinked, so it's they feed each other. Yeah,
and I get excited because I mean, there's a place for a PhD in the new world. Like you look at, say, Dr. Jane Goodall or Dr. Joe Dispenza, or you know, people. You know, that's an expression of
You know, they've had to walk that path to be where they are now, to have that voice.
Yeah.
So people will access the areas and things like that. And I just get excited that the areas that you're walking and dancing and the freedom of those doors opening.
Yeah.
So Joe's asked a question as part of, like, you know, so we've been exploring the legitimacy of a PhD.
And now we've,
no disrespect,
as I do, swing to something else.
A huge life dedication. Absolutely. And, you know, there's all these abstracts around, you know, commitment to what that study means. And, you know, there's so, you know, there's such an incredible investment on receiving that piece of paper, but you know, it does open doors, and there are different gifts of what it gives to the world. And we've gone from the whole intellectual pursuit of ecosexuality to Joe asking a very simple question that probably most of us have explored from also, time to time,
and probably have thought about it in this conversation, because it's come up in my mind many times. Where does masturbation sit in this? You know, it's really funny because I work with young girls, and sometimes I have to have meetings with the parents, like group sessions with the parents. And I had one group session once where I had parents ask me whether I would talk about masturbation with 10, 11-year-old girls. And I chose to not, because I just didn't feel like it was appropriate at that age to talk about it. Not that it's not occurring, because we know it is, and I'm not against it. But
also your programs are a certain amount of time, and there's a lot that absolutely. You fit into those, and that's kind of almost an extension, isn't
yes.
it, of going into more.
Yeah, yeah. But there is that line. I think why I brought it up is there's that line between shame and, you know, it's our bodies and we want to express. Mm. So where does this sit for you? Like,
great question. So it can even be brought back to that conversation of, am I doing this to get like to get fed to in the same way that I would engage with another person? Mm-hmm. Am I doing it to fill this void or to escape a particular like hunger or void or anything like or pain experience? Yeah. Am I doing it to escape a sensation? And so if engaging in that, am I doing it from a place of nourishment?
Mm-hmm.
Now that also opens up a very interesting conversation around, well, what is sexual nourishment of the feminine? Well, we've been taught that sexuality for everybody is the pursuit of a goal. It's the pursuit of an orgasm.
Yes.
Which is the expression of the masculine. It's the ascension, the climb to the top,
yeah.
and then it's some kind of release.
Yeah.
And whereas the feminine sexuality we don't really hear much about, which is the descent into the body and the opening.
Oh.
And so it's not the... Yeah.
Oh, my God. Did that just, like, make weird noise?
Joe felt that.
And that's so crazy.
Yeah. And so it's... And, you know, I think about it in the relationship with young women. If it does feel maybe too young to share that from a like the physical aspect of masturbation, there is actually the way that we can still teach young girls to develop a sensitivity to their body where they can practice the art of opening.
Mm.
Opening and being conscious about also when they close or enforce those boundaries.
Yeah.
And so... In regards to this has been my practice, I really noticed that throughout my life, if I was feeling that itch or feeling that hunger, I knew exactly the spot to kind of take me and reach that goal. And then it was like this, release.
Yeah. Mm.
And ultimately that's a collapse.
Mm.
It's a climb to the top and a collapse. And that is training my nervous system to hold a lot of energy and be intense and then collapse.
Yes.
Instead of widening and opening the capacity of my nervous system to hold more, to feel more, expand space. Myself.
Wow.
And,
yes.
and hold it without a...
release.
Without an end point.
It's actually instead of... reaching a peak and then drop and then drop and then collapsing. Mm. It's like you reach enlightenment, you reach the top, you reach God, and then it's gone.
Yeah. Mm.
And then it's over. And there might be some nice elation and stuff like that. But for the feminine, it's like she actually opens and expands and is able to maintain the dance with God, not as a place to reach, but as a possibility in the body here now. Mm. I used to have this thing where I was like, I know the spot. I can just go to that spot it's over. And now
it's a beautiful endorphin release.
Totally, totally. Well, and there's not, I want to say that this is also part of our wholeness is like acknowledging that we have to be these like enlightened, perfect beings all the time. You know what I mean? Like,
no, but
it's
why?
Okay.
I mean, now we're talking about different experiences.
And so I noticed that I had a particular bias or an experience that felt familiar, and the thing that felt unfamiliar was actually going in with no goal and being incredibly patient, and the entire purpose is developing my range, which is developing my sensitivity, my capacity to be with that. And so now I have a practice. I work with a mentor called Perry Chase, and she's in some ways she's kind of controversial, but she developed a practice called Sex Bomb.
Oh,
and
excellent.
It's a clitoral stroking practice, and it was developed, it came out of a lineage called orgasmic meditation, which is I call it omming, and it was a partnered practice, but she's made it just for women, so it's a self practice. And essentially, all of our nervous system as women mm-hmm. ends in the clitoris. Yeah. And so the principle here is it's not a pleasure practice. It's mm-hmm. not even a sexual practice. It's a spiritual practice.
Well, and it has to be. When yep. we think of it like that, how can that one thing,
which in some societies they cut off.
Yes.
No, but I'm not even talking about the clitoris. I'm talking about the act of orgasm.
Yeah.
Be that, like, there's no other, you can't find that expression anywhere else.
Yeah.
How can that not be a spiritual doorway to something?
Yeah.
You know, it just has to be. Well, it has to be the connection. There has to be.
And so when I do this practice, I'm noticing, like, it's actually really revealing. And what comes up when I first started was much more emotion, because it's like showing me all the places that I'm actually numb, and desensitized, and more in this pattern of goal chasing. In this process, actually, this teacher was like, "How you show up to your pussy is often how you show up in life."
Yeah,
it's like, am I pursuing this big goal and then collapse?
Yeah,
you know, am I running a program and then collapsing? Yeah. Am I doing this thing and burning out my nervous system,
or am I feeling a failure because I'm not even reaching?
Exactly.
All those things, exactly. You know, there's so much.
But or am I coming with a curiosity and an intention to open, an intention to just be with the sensation, be with the truth, be with what is.
I keep getting hold the space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like hold that.
And that is like space. It's the similar exact thing that I talked about on Naked and Afraid. It's like the feminine doesn't show up because you click your fingers and like perform for me. She requires romancing and attention and tenderness and presence and space.
Yeah.
And so in that process, it's been really revealing. And my experience, and even just a short time with it, and this won't be everybody's experience because we're all different journeys, but has been these like profound, like God-connected moments, which are not related to any goal at all.
Yeah.
It's like the spacious oneness, and it's like you're dancing in it instead of reaching it and then falling.
Yeah.
And so that, ultimately, that principle of all of that is just openness. And so I think and that's, if coming back to that conversation of binging or purging or nourishment, for me, my practice of nourishment has been that.
Yeah.
So if I want to self-pleasure, even though I'm not treating it necessarily from a pleasure context, I'm treating it from a spiritual context.
Yeah.
For me, the path hasn't been like, no masturbation allowed.
Yeah.
Like, that's wrong or shameful. Not exiling that part, but also not just being like, oh, I just need to, you know, rub one out and this thing. And and it's what's the path in the middle? Oh, it's actually going, if I'm going to attend to this, then I'm going to nourish myself. Going to do it properly.
Yeah.
Well, not doing it, you know, properly is, but yeah, like I'm actually going to
communicate with yourself.
Have this be a process of nourishment. Mm. Have this be a process of not escaping, not feeding. And in that, it's actually the opposite to filling a void, or an opposite to an escape from emotion, which is often how sex is done with another or self. And instead, it's like I have to be more with myself.
Yeah.
I have to be more with the emotions that come up. Wow. Because if I'm, particularly if it's related to the clitoris, if I'm, that's a connection to my nervous system. So any emotion that I'm holding or wanting to avoid, it's going to show up. It's going to be amplified.
Yes.
Like I'm literally touching it.
Yes.
I'm touching the emotion and I'm making space for it to be released. And the irony is when that's done, when energy is released from the nervous system, which often in the form of tension from held emotions, it makes you more sensitive. And when you're more sensitive, you feel an extraordinary more amount of pleasure.
Yeah.
And so that's the path that I've walked. And so if I had young girls, I would probably be teaching them about opening as opposed to goal orientation. Yeah.
And the funny thing that often happens with young girls is that, like, often very little girls spend a lot of time touching themselves. I mean, boys do it as well because it's, you know, if they're...
It feels good.
It feels good. But a lot of little girls, their parents will get up, you know, concerned that they're masturbating. And it's not, I think, what you're sharing is like... it's not that at all, but it's that connection with the nervous system and just that awareness of, oh, this feels nice.
Yeah.
I feel calm.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's a deeper connection. It's not about the outcome.
Yeah, not knowing
that at that age.
No, it's just a, just a very connected thing.
Innocent truth,
you know. The tantric, is it the Taoist, I think, approach to sex, male, female, is a lot along those lines as well, isn't it? Where it's like the men, their point is to not ejaculate, but to hold that point of the pinnacle, and for the female to be in that, that journeying of the experience where, as you described it, the openness, which, you know, is a beautiful space to sit.
Where can we go from there? Nowhere. No, I'm kidding.
But we do have to round it off. We do have to round it off. We've been going for
I feel there's a lot of
It's so nice chatting.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah,
it really is. I want to
once again, we've spent time with Britt, we've journeyed a lot of places, and we've left in a spot where she has to come back.
Yeah. I know. I can't.
I always just love my conversations.
I love them too. Look, we've, it's a three-way opening, let's put it that way, because I get so much.
Three-way opening, I love that.
Yeah, sitting in the space. I get so much joy. I learned so much. I feel so grounded after being with you. It's like there's no hoo-ha.
Oh.
Yeah. It just is. It's just great. So I love that. I just get authentic sitting with you. It's such a beautiful word to not to categorize you or put you in a box or anything, but yeah. It's an ever evolving authentic space.
Thank you. I appreciate that a lot. I think one of the things that I do really enjoy of like being able to go through these initiatory experiences, I won't even say that, it's like to be able to live the wholeness of life, like to go, you know, to have the breadth of life show up in many ways, is that in a way I really love when people show me their realness, or we have real conversations. It's like, give me the mess, give me the raw human stuff, you know. I think in some circumstances people are really like scared to see that or triggered by a talk, because it's like it invites them to look at that inside themselves, but it's like I just love it. I love the raw human conversations.
It's nourishment.
It's nourishment because it's the part of us that doesn't necessarily get brought to the table, or it's like, put that away. We can't talk about masturbation.
Yeah.
Like, you know, put that out there, but this is the path to wholeness. Yeah. It's like, no, bring us the real, raw, messy stuff, and this is actually our path home.
Absolutely. That's that. Everything you just said just then is like, you know, we as women, we should be, and if we are asking to be whole and to accept that challenge, because it is a challenge. It has its beauty and everything, but it is a challenge as well, is to be able to sit in the space of confront, you know, face, to get uncomfortable.
The place of growth.
And get excited about that.
There's a really cool parable or something, I think it is, about the lobster, and it's like often the lobster will, when it has its shell, it'll get really itchy and it will kind of feel that it has to move and it doesn't want to, but then it actually has to migrate and find a new shell. And that's that same feeling. It's like as soon as we kind of get comfortable, it's not to say that comfort is a bad thing, it's also part of our wholeness, but when there's that wriggling and you can feel that, oh, there's something, there's an invitation to grow there, and it can feel uncomfortable, it can feel vulnerable, like a lobster without a shell.
You're very vulnerable. Far out.
naked and afraid.
So for everybody, Brit was on Naked and Afraid this year in Feb. It got launched. It's still on now, isn't it?
It's still on. So depending on where you're listening to this from, and what date you're listening to it. So it got launched in the US first. So anyone in that kind of part of the world. But in Australia, our replays of things are a bit delayed.
I haven't been able to find it, and I've been down some illegal paths. But amazing show. And you get to see her, Brit, in her
element.
Thank you. And it's on season 17, and I love the episode name. It's called There Will Be Blood.
Oh, yes. Oh,
is it right?
Yeah.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, and so it's really interesting because they chose to really strongly focus on that.
I love that. I love that.
And obviously, like, the Discovery Channel and the production company has chose that they really want to maybe be supportive of that. There was aspects that I would say I was like, oh, that's unfortunate because there's a lot of material that is covered, like a lot of footage.
Yeah.
And so there was moments where, like, there was images of me laying down. And I'm like, that was from day 20. Like,
so they mashed
it together and kind of made it look like I was lying down all this time. And it was like, woman has her period and can't do anything. Yes. It's like, come on.
Yes.
That's why I need invented the tampon.
I was like, I didn't even show my tampon. I was like, I made spring beds for everybody. Like,
no way.
Springs and, like, extra fluff and mattresses and blankets. Wow. And I'm like, you didn't show any beds. But that's all right. This is the surrender part, right?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, cool. That's the story.
You're raising the bar too high for the other contestants that have to follow on.
Yeah. If I'm ever going to go bush with you, I've got high expectations.
And I really love, like, just listening to you speak before too. Like last year when you came on and you spoke about that book, The Castle.
Cathedral of the Wild.
Yeah. And when you were talking before around in the early days of coming in to give and be in reciprocity, how you, that's how you connected with your bleed being in the first part and being 2 weeks early. And I feel like your spirit was so intuitively connected from going back from that book and connecting to that story of, you know, South of Africa. To actually walking on the land, it was already innately in tune with that soil. I feel like there was a real beautiful, like that offering of I'm here.
It did make it a lot easier because if I went in there being like, I'm here for a TV show and I want to, you know, there's a part of me that maybe wants to be famous or I wants to, you know, wants it for my kind of some kind of ego gain. I would have been really attached to the story that gets shared. And of course there's a part of me that wants to be represented, like, well, I think that would be untrue to say. But because I knew that there was this other spiritual, let's say, undercurrent of like 7 years before, like 7 years later from reading that book. So it was the closing of like a seven-year cycle that I read that book, that I pursued this path, that I've now come and having this kind of really big experience, that I've received this very strong message. So for me, it was kind of like I had a paid ceremonial experience in Africa that just happened to be filmed.
And you do look bloody amazing, kind of, you know, your smile lights up the screen.
That's so cool.
You speak beautifully.
That is wild when you look at it like that.
Thank you,
universe. I was like, I got a completely paid experience. And I'd love to go back because I just fell in love with that place. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Like, it was the beginning of a love affair.
Somebody's probably living in your Taj Mahal.
Probably.
A crocodile.
Or we say, like, a Pumba-like warthog.
Could be.
Yeah. Or one of the buffaloes, the Cape buffaloes.
Wow. Yeah.
Which are actually the most dangerous animal in Africa.
Yes. I've heard that too. Yes, whole other story. I could talk about Naked and Afraid forever. But thank you so much for coming on, Bree. I know we're going to have you. Bree.
That's
Bree.
All right.
I'm calling you Bree now.
That's all right. Bree. I was actually called that in my younger years. So.
Ah.
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah, right.
Yes, this will definitely be a two-part series, which is great.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing everything.
Oh,
so
my goodness. Openly.
Yeah, that's the word. Yeah.
Really lovely.
I don't know if you can edit this in because I just thought of this actually.
Please.
I was like, I really want to say that because I think it might be useful. Is that when we're having the conversation about masturbation, and this, what I find really interesting is this pursuit of goals or pursuit of some kind of moving and expressing energy is the same with the realm of emotion. So I find this really interesting that people think that they're connecting to their emotions and therefore the feminine, but actually the way that we are taught to express, cathart, push it out, move it on of our emotions is actually the masculine as well. Wow. Is like that, and not to say that a good cathartic release sometimes when necessary isn't powerful, because I've definitely experienced some very powerful releases. Mm. But even that principle of like, oh, what's the muscle that's quite overdeveloped and what's maybe underdeveloped, or put forward as what's the path that's put forward as the only path of emotional release versus a different one. And I'm seeing in the you know, world of social media and also a lot of these healing spaces is these cathartic experiences of emotional release. And whilst they no doubt serve a purpose, I'm really curious about them from the lens of it's a more masculine style of release of move it out of the body and almost like the similar principle of ejaculation.
Go to a
peak, rise to that peak of a transcendental state, and then move it out of the body and release. And as I said, serves a purpose. But what about giving space, giving time, giving presence? And instead of moving an emotion out, why not let it all the way in, just like the feminine does, descends into the body and opens. And I kind of imagine it almost like water, like letting water sift into your body and then fill all of the cracks and let it break your heart open. You know, and that's another aspect of emotional transmutation that I don't think is really discussed. And we see more of this like release as opposed to these more subtle but actually much more integratable types of emotional alchemy, which is the feminine way. And that's same thing in sexuality.
I was just thinking that too. Maybe there is a path to that, and maybe you've reached that path where you're noticing that and realizing that now.
Totally.
Where other people have to go wherever they need to go to then come to that realization to be able to, because that's quite a big thought process.
In wholeness, both parts, all parts are necessary. They're a part of the picture. And so my curiosity isn't about like one being wrong or there being a right way or a wrong way to do anything. What interests me personally is what muscles have been really developed or what ways feel really more normalized and common or like the go-to versus what's the exiles. You know, what's been exiled
part,
or
we
what
see?
Part yeah exactly what's the other way or what's the part that's the not really part. Given much
and if you
credit
want to
or attention
desert, you take away the water. And when it, like the I'm just a big thing, big blur flooding here, like when we did the had the havening. You know, that is it's a physical, it's a very soft, gentle touch, and it's triggering neurochemical pathways to release trauma. And when you were talking then around the flooding, the water, feminine coming through the body, that you could imagine that initially that would release some emotional memories, triggers, traumas. It would take practice of that muscle to continue flooding the body, flooding the senses, flooding the emotions in that way. And eventually the practice would be the goal of an evenly dispersed water body, if you want to put it that way, and therefore a lush, fertile
ground
ecosystem within the body and all senses. I mean, it's just very, very big what you just
said. I was thinking the same thing. It's a very big
It really touches so much.
You
know, it's amazing.
Absolutely.
Well, it's kind of comes back to what I would describe as wildness, because I do get asked that a lot. It's like, what do you mean by wild? To be a wild woman or to be a wild human? Even in the context of sovereign, what does to be sovereign means? And for me, wildness isn't like you have to act a particular way or behave a particular way or like go barefoot or, you know, go out in the bush all the time. It's to be wild is I have access in balance to all parts of me. There are no parts that are exiled. There are no parts in my ecology. If you could imagine like an ecology of self, every part I have respect and celebration for, because I acknowledge that they are playing a role in the ecology of self. They're supporting my whole being to thrive, just like how nature does. You know, we go and look at a forest and we recognize every part of a forest is playing a role. So every part of me, every expression of my energy is also playing a role. And so to be wild means I have access to all of those parts in balanced. Mm. I'm not unbalanced. And so I give myself approval and acceptance for when I just feel like masturbating and having a quick orgasm.
Yeah.
And I have equal access to like that profound opening and yeah. dancing with God when I go really, really slow. And I don't shame myself or punish myself for either way.
Yes.
I have the freedom to choose. Yeah. I have the freedom to be it all.
Yes.
I have the freedom to express my energy, my emotions in a cathartic way, and I have the freedom mm-hmm. and capacity to let them all in, like let them deeply in yeah. and like kind of filter almost through. Yeah almost yeah. like water the heart yeah. you know mm. and every part is with equal accessibility and approval in myself. And for me, that's what it is to be wild. That's what it is to be a sovereign human being. Because any points that are exiled, any points that aren't approved of, that's often the points of control. It's where I can be controlled.
Where are you with when it comes to alcohol or food or
yeah.
I think the same principles apply. I thought that the same.
I was
going to
say
many
the same
times.
Principle. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. yeah. Same principle applies. Yeah, for me, the same principle applies is that I also have a system that's like a bit of a rebel. So if I put a rule in, I'm like, no alcohol,
yes.
then there's always a part that shows up and is like, yeah. but what about it? Yeah, yeah. And so it's like, oh, can I be an approval to like, because I, and this is the thing, if I shun or exile part of myself, it often will have become a distorted version. It'll become this twisted, hungry thing if I starve it.
Mm.
Whereas in if I actually give it nourishment at times,
yes,
then it doesn't come in and try and destruct. And so at the moment, where I'm sitting with that now, don't know if that'll be like that forever, but with alcohol, it's like I don't actually have it very often at all.
Mm.
But if I'm out with a friend and they say, and they offer, or if I intuitively feel in my body and I'm not doing it to cover up something, or
yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
actually, I would love to do that to yeah. celebrate and to have a joyful experience or whatever. Yeah. I let myself, I'm in approval of it.
Yeah.
And I make sure that I'm doing it in a way that the next morning I won't feel shame, because that's the big thing.
Yeah, the 100%. Reason I asked is
yeah,
because
very strong,
at the so. Very start when I said mm. to you, you know, that there's the people that say, but we're human and we're here to have that full experience.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, is that just not being responsible in that mm. way? It's what I'm hearing from you is that it's about being responsible.
Mm.
Being truly sovereign and being truly in touch with what is an integrity for you.
Yeah. yeah. Mm. I think the question even in the moment is like when I'm presented with a situation where I say, I'll use alcohol as an example. And this same example can be extrapolated out for sex, for relationships, for food, for anything. Do I need it?
Yeah.
Am I in a situation where I'm offered it and I'm like, oh, I don't really need it? Or do I have the freedom, because there's no charge, I'm like, oh, I could have it or I could leave it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And for me, that's when I know I'm in good relationship to
yeah.
it.
Yeah, I'm a bit like that too. I'm not a big drinker, but if I'm being offered a nice glass of red wine and I'm really just in neutrality, is that the
yeah.
word, around it, like I don't have to have it, I can have it, mm. it doesn't really matter. I'll have it.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's the same, it's the exact
it.
Mm. same principle yeah. of nourishment.
Yeah.
It's like, am I in this moment, do I feel, oh, I shouldn't have that because I, you know, for health reasons or for this reasons, like honestly, the self-punishment
yes.
that is the undercurrent energy of that is doing more damage to you than the glass of wine.
Yes. yes.
like, and so energetically, it's like, it's yeah, you're doing more damage. So it's not a path of starvation or punishment. Versus it's not also drinking a whole bunch of bottles
of
wine
course.
To kind of escape. But, okay, what's the path of nourishment here,
mm.
which is, oh, this is actually going to add to my experience and connection with this person or with myself. And I'm not using it as an escape for anything. I'm doing it to nourish my human experience.
Mm.
So it should all
be a celebration of
yeah.
that moment.
Yeah.
yeah.
Mm.
Sure. That's how I've kind of related to it anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of freedom in that.
Yeah. And even when I choose something else, even when I'm like, I would really just like to just bliss out for a little while or whatever it is, being conscious of that. Yeah. I'm consciously choosing. And I think that's ultimately where change starts, is becoming. It's like when something's unconscious, when I'm reaching for anything unconsciously and just kind of becomes a crutch of any sort, that's where it becomes, it has its own nature. It becomes kind of or can become destructive.
Yeah, but without purpose.
As instead of like, I know that I'm consciously doing this. And I've had experiences where like situations where emotions come up and I've actually said to myself, I can't be with this right now because I need to show up and I need to do something. Like I need to be on.
Yes, yes.
And I can't feel this right now. I've actually had this out loud conversation with myself. I'm like, I need to show up and... for example, I had a mentoring client once, was doing an overnight mentoring, and I had something big happen the day before, but she'd booked this for months, and I was like, Britt, you show up for this person in service. This is, and that's what felt true for me at the time. And I knew I couldn't be with this emotional content, but I said to myself out loud, I'm choosing to not feel this, but I promise to you in the days following, I will make space for you, and I'm not leaving you behind.
Yes.
And so that sometimes is necessary in life.
And then there's the other aspect, which is this person could be bringing you exactly what you need.
Yeah.
In that moment.
Yeah.
You know, that person that's coming to you may have all the answers that you need or you need to hear.
Exactly.
Whatever, you know?
Exactly. Yeah,
that's
what
I love about those things.
That unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's actually, I found through that experience, there's a potent amount of healing that comes actually in the right context. It's not always the case, but in my context, being able to put aside my stuff and actually show up completely in service to another human being. And it was when I came out on the other side, it all my stuff had lost its charge a bit.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, actually, you know, to take the focus off myself a bit was really nice.
Mine and Trev's mentor from years ago used to always say, you know, if you're in something, go and be there for somebody else and watch it disappear.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so it's like, but you have to fully show up.
Yeah, yeah.
You go in pissed off and start sharing what you're pissed off about, whatever. You have to fully be there. Yeah, take the other person out with you.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
That's how it works. Oh, and I guess too, that's sometimes the intensity of the self-nurturing and the self-nourishment is that we can be a little bit too involved in maintaining that garden, and sometimes being out of our garden is a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. to bring it back to that, like what we seek is not our purpose. It's to seek, it's to feel alive.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and so to not give up, like to allow, give ourselves permission to be alive.
What was the word you used before? You said a really great word.
So many great words, Joe. I've got like 50 pages.
It was like something else. It was like
approval?
No. It was like a good descriptive word of living. It's like excited, but it wasn't excited. It was something else. I can't remember. Anyway, time to close this one off. But,
we hope you've all enjoyed time with Britt, because seriously, I feel like you're just stepping into... spaces upon spaces upon spaces,
openings
so
upon
much.
Openings.
Yes. That's really special, really, in all the ways.
Thank you for the gift that you are beautiful.
Thank you. It's always such a pleasure coming and having conversations. I gotta live for these conversations.
I told
you. So I appreciate it a lot.
Thank you.
Can't wait to see you. She comes in my dreams. Thank you for listening to our Girl Awakening podcast. We are also on YouTube as Girl Awakening. We'd love to see you there with comments on how our guests resonated with you or your own awakening. Please share the love with a like and subscribe while you're there. A blissful thank you to Ksenia Luki, the amazing artist behind our theme song. We will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.